Welcome to Chronic Combat Conversations, a live look at our best bets, picks, and predictions for every UFC event. With your hosts, TV Scouting MMA and
Guru Scouting MMA, back again, but in a live format from YouTube. So thanks for popping in. Please feel free to like that video if you can. Subscribe to our YouTube channel. Thanks for listening on the podcast for UFC Vegas 37, also known as UFC Fight Night 192 and UFC on ESPN Plus 50. We have a middleweight main event between Anthony Lionheart Smith, the perennial contender, versus Ryan Superman Spann in his first main event spot. And this is definitely an interesting card put together. After a week off, they give us 15 fights. So I have a lot to look forward to here.
Yeah, this is going to be a really awesome fight night. Maybe not packing as much juice as the pay-per-views coming up, but it's a nice way to get us started back. They certainly filled it out. So in case there's any shenanigans at weigh-ins, any more COVID scares, it seems like we should have a nice full fight night.
Yeah, I decided to wear my UFC 263 shirt tonight for anybody watching live because they just announced that Brandon Moreno will defend his title in the trilogy versus Figueiredo. So I was really excited about that, so I put that on tonight.
There you go. I got my Izzy Adesanya little zip up on here.
Oh yeah.
So we're all ready to go. Now what we're gonna do here is we're gonna bump over and get a little view of some UFC stats on the screen, because we always like to talk about a breakdown of the numbers and, you know, how things are looking. So I'd like you guys to see what we're talking about too. So for this card, there are a few fights earlier on to kick it off that, you know, I'm not as interested in getting down into a breakdown. So, you know, Hannah Goldie, she'll be taking on Emily Whitmire on short notice. And yeah, I think that, you know, going up a weight class, there's a little bit too much going on there for me to want to make a play with the short notice and all that. We got Gustavo Lopez and Alatang Haley, and I think that both guys really faced tough competition in their last time out, and they'll both be hungry. It's going to be really tough to make a play on that fight where you could be sure on either side. And I think the line kind of shows that too. You have plus 105 Lopez and minus 125 Alatang Haley. So, you know, both of those opener fights, you have a plus 105 and a minus 125 on DraftKings. So they're really tight. If you want to, you know, do dog or pass or anything like that, that's great. I'm just not looking to play it.
Yeah, I mean, if I had to think anything at all, I guess I lean Goldie based on activity. I'm not sure, as much as I love Emily Whitmire, that she belongs in the UFC. And honestly, that Alatang Lopez fight is going to be a barn burner. But like, I'm not fully sure where it's going to go. I think it's a coin flip. They have it lined pretty fairly.
Yeah, I totally agree. So to get
and
to by where
the way, and I think the and I agree. I think the Whitmire Goldie fight is also lined pretty fairly. I kind of like a plus money stab on somebody a little bit more active. But you're right, short notice, different weight class, so that could be. Actually, no, it's just the right weight class, right? Strawweight.
Yeah. I think it was actually going to be upweight for Goldie on this fight.
Well, this is it is booked as a
women's flyweight. Yeah.
Yep. It is booked as a flyweight. I mean, don't know why I misread that. Okay. Yeah. That's so fine. I mean, listen, Goldie is just jacked. So I mean, I don't see why that. I mean, that's probably her closer walking around weight. It could benefit her against Whitmire, who's like not a physical threat at all. But again, like I didn't really want much tape on Whitmire for this because we said we weren't going to talk about it.
Yeah, I just think that there's so many improvements she could have made. Switching gyms and stuff. And yeah, it's best to just enjoy those two fights and see the progress that all those fighters have made. But
you're 100% right. Yeah. I'm definitely excited for them. They're good fights. So
definitely. But getting to our third fight of the night here, we got Impa Kasanganai versus Carlston Harris.
And I'm so excited for this fight. This might be one of those sleeper fights that you may have never heard of either guy as a casual fan, but I'm so excited to watch these guys square off.
It's going to be great.
I don't know if anybody knows Carlston Harris's story, but if you haven't, you got to go watch on YouTube. Dana White's Looking for a Fight. It was the one in Abu Dhabi right before the Conor Poirier fight. And it was just a really great episode. And the dude defeated Khabib's prospect, essentially Khabib's training partner, a prospect that they were really coming to watch to fight, and he upset I don't know how to pronounce his name, I don't want to be rude, but it was in UEA Warriors 15, and it was a great fight, and they gave him a contract, and then he came out versus Christian Aguilera, got the first round sub and a $50,000 bonus. Like, you couldn't be happier for the guy.
Yeah, I actually found that fight very interesting because Carlson Harris gets a deep body lock early, and you're like, oh man, he keeps on going for these trips, and Aguilera is using the fence really well to kind of stay up, and you know, Harris actually can't get an early takedown. What happens is Harris actually starts landing from distance and Aguilera shoots for a takedown on him. And that's where the Anaconda comes in. And damn, once that got locked in, you know, Aguilera goes out. So I was definitely impressed how comfortable Harris looked on the feet. He seemed comfortable for a primary grappler, especially a guy that has, you know, 5 submission wins compared to 4 knockout wins. But he's also got 7 decisions. So it's not like he can't go the distance. And against a guy like Kasanganai, who's also got 6 decisions and 3 submissions on his record, there's a couple angles that I do find myself interested in this fight. I got the multiple laptop, you know, up running here. So pardon me if I'm looking around, going crazy. I'm also running the UFC stats for us here. But I really like one, Carlson Harris, money line at plus 105. I do think that he uses his length well, that he has experience in the weight class, and he has double the experience that Kasanganai has. So I'm a little bit interested. You know, I was impressed with Kasanganai's submission win over Poletnikov, but it came with 0 hooks in, and it was really brute strength from like a cradle position. And it was great that Kasanganai showed that he could dominate an opponent that should be dominated on the ground. But Carlson Harris isn't that guy. He's got a Lucha Libre background. And yeah, I just think, you know, on top of Carlson Harris, you know, like that, I would also say I'm interested in, does this fight go the distance? And yes, at minus 135, that's not so bad for a couple of guys that have really been the distance a lot in their career.
That's kind of exactly what I was angling towards. These guys have both earned quick finishes in their last fight against guys that were susceptible to, you know, the ground game. These guys are a little bit more well-versed. They're obviously very tough. Impa had never been finished, let alone lost a fight, until he lost that freak knockout from Joaquin Buckley, who's also on the card again tonight. Or I guess on this card, I should say, not tonight, on Saturday. And yeah, so I definitely think that what's the line on it to go the distance? Because that's what you said, that minus 135 plus 100 not to.
Yeah, I feel like both of these guys are experienced in the fact that they can definitely take a punch and you know, compose themselves. I saw Aguilera land a nice uppercut, and Harris, you know, circles away, gets on his bike. You know, you can see it hurt him, but he composes himself, and he's able to, like I say, stay relaxed from distance. And then Kasanganai, you know, he made a huge mistake against Buckley, and he did it in all of his fights in the UFC, where he catches the kick and he holds it for too long. The third time he does it in the Buckley fight, you know, he gets that spinning kick.
Viral knockout, yeah.
So I don't think he goes to do that again, but Harris does throw a lot of kicks. So I don't think he has that type of Taekwondo spinning shit in his background, but that's where I do think Kasanganai does have a good chin. It's just like that strike was absolutely unreal.
I just wondered, is this one of those fights, do these guys settle in, or is it because the cage is smaller, they're just going to be throwing hands? I wonder what their strikes per minute is. Do you have that pulled up? I can't.
I do. So Kasanganai lands 5 strikes per minute, and Harris at 1.74, but he's such a limited sample size, so I really don't like to look at it too closely. No, but Kasanganai has a lot of fight time. So his 49% accuracy and 59% defense are actually really good. So yeah. I do think that, you know, he does have 58% takedown accuracy. But when you look against who he's done that against, you know, like Mackie Patolo and Sasha Poletnikov, like Joaquin Buckley was actually able to do some control in the clinch against him. And I think Harris is going to be able to get that clinch control time as well.
You know, one thing I did find interesting, I'm not sure if you mentioned it earlier, but on his regional record, He has a win over Wellington Turman and Michel Pereira, both unanimous decisions. But, I mean, those are pretty well-known names, guys that are winning in the UFC recently. So,
yeah,
I don't know how much stock you can put into 2016 wins, 2015 wins, but they look good.
So, I would agree. And listen, if you got a play that you're feeling good about, make sure you leave a comment in the chat. Let us know who you're taking, because this is going to be, like Guru said, this might be like one of the best fights of the night from an entertainment perspective. So I'm definitely excited to see what happens.
I honestly might take the coward's way out and wait till weigh-ins to make an official lean or play. I'm really all over the place. I really do think I like Harris, but like I might just be really rooting for him. So I really need to, I don't know, I need to see some weigh-ins, some face-offs. Because there, what is it? It's like a 1-inch height and reach for Harris, but Imp is just such a force. So I really do want to see how that looks.
Definitely. Well, I think we broke that one down as much as we could. Let's move on to our next fight. Erin Blanchfield and Sarah Alpar, there's a lot of variance in that fight, because you got Blanchfield was planning to make a debut at 135. Now she's actually doing it her proper weight class at 125. Alpar coming down from her debut at 135. And man, there's just a lot going on in this one, and not a lot of UFC experience overall. There's only one total fight between Blanchfield and Alpar. So I'm going to watch that one, see if Blanchfield is the real deal. But like minus 365, I mean, I might just put a small play on Alpar, because that line is crazy.
That's kind of where I was most interested in looking at this fight, because, you know, at first you're like, okay, you know, two women's starting in there, like you're not really sure where you can get a value from, but where you can really find value, at least I tried to see if I could find value, is exactly what you just said, in such a wide line. And one of the questions we always try to ask on this show is, does this fighter deserve, you know, this high of a line, this big of a favorite? Are they really going to win this often? And at minus 365, they're really not giving Alpar much of a chance at all. So when I looked at the tape, I mean, Alpar did have, you know, the good timing on the takedown. She's a career 135er wrestler. She was tough, man. She broke her nose versus Clark and got completely smashed. And unfortunately, towards the end of that fight, and Tyone let it go for that extra 2 minutes.
It was too much.
That was brutal. I felt so bad. Her wedding was like in 3 weeks or whatever, which was like the funny storyline going in. And she's like, yeah, I hope I don't get, I'm going to get a quick win and get in and out and I'll look good for my wedding. And instead, yeah, okay. Chris Tyone let her face get absolutely mangled. So this is her return since then. And then you have Blanchfield, who was set to make her debut, right? And then somebody pulled out.
Yeah. Yeah. I believe she was going to make her debut against the 135er. And I think it was even.
Norma,
oh, man.
Jamon, who,
yes.
Weight.
And she always misses weight. So,
yes.
Oh, hey. Hey, we got our first comment here. Josh Koscheck actually hopping in the chat. Sam, we're spitting facts. If you want to do a fighter interview, hit me up. Twitter at Josh Koscheck. So if that's really him, that's great. Awesome, man. Thank you. I appreciate
that.
Yeah,
we love Josh Koscheck, man. You're a legend if that's you. So
hell yeah.
Shout out Josh Koscheck.
Yeah. Great stuff. So yeah, that would be awesome. Anywho. So yeah, I think it's probably best to just stay away from this fight.
Yeah, I agree. Unless you're taking a dog flyer. I didn't really see much value in betting Blanchfield here.
No. So let's get into, what is this? Is this our widest line fight of the night? Or the second? I think this is the widest line. Montel Jackson versus JP Bays. minus 675 to plus 475.
Yeah, that line has gotten out of hand.
Is Montel Jackson going to win this fight? I mean,
yes.
I put it at like 90%.
Yeah.
So, yeah, is the line correct?
What is it lined at? What's the exact percentage if we had to?
It's minus 675.
So I got my little converter here.
Yeah. But I mean, so realistically, JP Bays making the move up to 135 against a guy who's 5'10".
That's
so he's given up.
It's an 87.1 implied probability percentage.
All right. So, I mean, maybe you're getting value, but I mean, damn.
I mean, if you think he's winning 9 out of 10 times, then essentially you are getting value is the rule, right? Is that what they say?
Yeah. I mean, Montel Jackson, the reasons why I would say maybe you want to feel comfortable with him here. He is 4-2 in the UFC and those two losses, Miles Johns, Brett Johns and Ricky Simone. So yeah,
two really solid wrestlers. And the one thing I did not necessarily love about Montel Jackson is that he seems a bit flat-footed to me, which can be a problem, especially with wrestlers who are going to try to take you down. But he's very long and rangy. He absolutely smacks Strader around. He's got these huge hands. Like, he's got XL-sized gloves, which they were, like, raving about. Southpaw, which can be difficult. He's kind of big for bantamweight. He shows himself very composed and patient, which I really thought is, you know, good of somebody that doesn't necessarily have that many fights. So, yeah, I do think he's going to be too much for Baze at the end of the day. So do you bet it? You can, but I mean, we've seen the parlay busters before. I don't think he's the one, but at minus, all the value's gone at minus 675. I mean, in terms of previous line value, it's gone because you could have gotten him at whatever minus 400 a week ago or whatever.
Right. So
in that respect, the value is gone. If we still want to sit here and determine whether minus 675 is still value, I mean, that's a different conversation.
Yeah, I think that ultimately on this fight, if there is going to be one thing that I would think about playing, it's actually going to be a method. So
I like where you're going with this. I already know where you're going.
Yeah, if you're going to fit a narrative, you know, Jackson by knockout, Strader is a guy that walks forward, chin up, you know, willing to get into firefights. JP Baze is going to be looking to make this a wrestling match, get dirty. You know, I think he had a real rough matchup against Bruno Silva, who's highly active. Jackson isn't that type of guy. So I see it more, maybe we see a decision here. You know, Jackson goes to decision quite often. He's been to decision 4 times in his career. So it's not out of the question. 2 of those losses, 2 of those wins, you know, and they've all been in the UFC. So JP Baze, while everyone is expecting a knockout, it's at minus 110, you know, plus 215 for a decision. It might be interesting for like an extremely small play, but
I think it's interesting. And then if you even want to, if you're that nervous and you want to stay away from the apple pie shitter effect, you can just go to the fight goes the distance, even at plus money, still at plus 150. So if that is the play that you like. But
yeah,
I agree. This might still be a pop and popcorn fight just because of the line. The line has kind of run away from us.
I agree. And so now we got on our next fight, moving right along. We're going to skip over the next two. We had a couple late notice fill-ins, and both of the guys that are fighting are like supremely low, you know, as far as their experience goes. So we're going to go right to Penny Kianzad versus Raquel Pennington. However, we have our second comment in the chat here. So we'll pull it up real quick. We got Anthony Imperiale hopping in. I'm a go big or go home kind of guy. If I were to throw down a good amount on one lucrative bet, do you suggest one? So I'm going to suggest you stay around because we are going to have a play of the day coming up, and we'll make sure we break out the banner for it. And yeah, we'll tag it for you guys. So stick around. Thanks for stopping by.
We always appreciate that.
Hell yeah. Big time. So now here we go. We're getting real close to the main card here. If not already added, I honestly don't know how they have it set up. It's probably a good idea to find out what's going on. Right. So let's see. Actually,
not that important. I'm just kidding. Yeah. Which fight are we?
So we're going to be picking up at Raquel Pennington versus Penny Kianzad.
Awesome. So that should be the prelims still, because it's such a big card that there should be a ton of prelims. It's probably a
gigantic card. Yeah. Which is crazy having Raquel Pennington on the prelims at this point. Like, I respect it, but like,
I mean, I'm not sure. I mean, you could probably give her the main card spot over Ariana Lipsky and Mandy Bohm, but I guess I understand why they're pushing those two.
Yeah. They're not even the featured prelim. So, yeah, let's get right into it because the next one is the featured prelim. So, Penny Kianzad, 4-2 in her UFC career. 15-5 overall. Raquel Pennington, 8-5 in her UFC career, 10-8 overall. While that record might look, pretty rough, it's actually against some of the most experienced women's fighters in UFC history.
Without a doubt. So, those losses to Holly Holm, Jermaine Durandamé, Amanda Nunes, Holly Holm, Jessica Andrade, Leslie Smith, Kat Zingano. Those are all Hall of Fame women's MMA fighters. I mean, Jessica Andrade maybe is the borderline one, but she's probably on her. No, she won the belt, right? So that's
yes, she did.
So I take that back. I apologize to UFC fans everywhere.
Yeah. So I say
certainly over Kat Zingano. That was slanderous.
Yeah, when I go to break down these two fighters, like I just come away thinking like they're the same prototype of fighter. Like, oh my God, like how do you, it's going to be a clinch fest. It's going to be dirty boxing. It's going to be knees. And then if one of them is able to trip or take down the other in the clinch, the other's not so bad from bottom. So, I think it's going to be really interesting. I think it's going to mostly stay standing and in the clinch. And it's going to be tough to say who wins. I really do think there is a reason why Pennington is -130, but Kienzad is the attractive option at +110. It just doesn't make me feel comfortable seeing Alexis Davis win a lot of exchanges from distance when they were fighting. So Penny Kienzad, it's like, man, I definitely didn't come away the most impressed from that fight, but
Alexis Davis is quite tough, right? And then she hasn't been booked again another fight. I thought she was going to be booked again. She had that good fight against Sabrina Mazo. So, you're right. They're super close. And I think if anything, you may want, it's probably a dog or pass spot. Cause I'm certainly not sold on Pennington for any sort of reason. Are you? I mean, the win versus Mary.
I'm not. You know what I'm sold on is the fight to go the distance at -300.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
I am dead sold on that. Penny Kienzad has one submission loss in her career. And Raquel Pennington has two submission wins. I don't think she's getting a submission win here. And she has one knockout loss. I don't think Kianzad's getting a knockout win here. I really see this going the distance. -300.
Like random cut stoppages or any sort of bullshit. Like,
yeah.
-300, you can parlay it to, Carlston Harris or something, or not even him, whoever you want.
I think if there was a play that I was like, yes, that's the one on this fight, I don't know who's going to win. I really don't. I don't have like a solid pick. I really want to see the weigh-ins and everything as far as making just a pick.
What are the strikes per minute? I can't see it on my screen when it's like this.
So the strikes per minute, we got 5.71 for Kienzad and 3.62 for Pennington. But the strikes absorbed are, 4.56 for Kienzad and 3.20 for Pennington. So it's all relative. Pennington's defense is 63%, whereas Kienzad's only 54. And Pennington's fought the much higher level of competition. That's what I'm saying. Like, Pennington, there's a reason why she is the -130. I just think this fight, because of their styles, plays out so closely that you can't play either fighter here and feel comfortable about it. It's like -300 for it to go the distance. 75% of the time, hell yeah, I think it goes 85% of the time.
Yeah, you're right. I do think you're right. That makes sense to me.
So if you're going to parlay, do like a parlay, I don't know if that's like a best play of the day type of deal, but like if I'm building out a parlay with a few fights, I'm definitely going to use that for this fight.
You have to.
Yeah. So I think we're pretty much set to get along to our next one, huh?
Definitely.
And talk about a slap fest.
Yeah, this is going to be a really sloppy fight. I would try to stay away from this one. This is going to be crazy. Tafan and Chukwe versus Mike Rodriguez. Slow Mike Rodriguez, mind you. Not even fast Mike Rodriguez. It's slow Mike Rodriguez.
Yeah, I could see that being, somewhat of an issue here because Chukwe does have very good Muay Thai and kickboxing. And, he's experienced in that regard, and he definitely packs some power. I don't want to say a lot of power because, like, he doesn't have as many knockouts. Well, I mean, he has four knockouts and one decision win, but he doesn't do it as quickly as you would think in certain fights. Like Matavao on Contender Series and Pickett goes to decision with him. Those are a couple of fights where you thought Nchukwu might get a knockout, and then he comes in and fights Park, and man, talk about a disappointing performance. You know, it is a majority decision. I think, what was there, a deduction for a nut shot or something that made it close, but otherwise Nchukwu got dominated like the whole time. So good for him. Mike Rodriguez is probably not going to be out here looking to grapple, but he's so much bigger. And like we saw in the William Knight versus, Down Jung, was it?
Yeah.
Exactly. So it's just like such a size discrepancy, because Rodriguez is 4 inches taller and he's got 5 inches reach. So if he does go to use some of that pressure and top control, and, you know, I know he trained out of Law Zone MMA for a while. I think he moved on somewhere else, but he's got experience, you know, grappling. It's just, he's not the best there. So I don't trust him to use it. So it's very tough to trust him overall, but at plus 100, if you need to make a degenerate play, if you need to make, I bet on every fight on the card play, it's Mike Rodriguez at plus 100. And I honestly, I know you were saying you had an idea on this fight, so I'll let you take that.
Oh, I honestly thought for this fight, the most interesting play was to not pick a side. And I like the fight to go the distance, because I think that these guys, I think it's going to be a slop fest. And I'm not sure that either of these guys are going to be able to finish the other one. Like, I think they're going to kind of get comfortable and set a pace and just kind of stick to it. And it's going to be one of those really sloppy, dirty fights that either side you're holding a ticket on, I think you're going to be like gripping it really, really tightly. So I think I'd like the fight to go the distance at plus 140.
Mm. I mean, okay.
Okay. I mean, obviously, it's Mike Rodriguez has the last 1, 2, 3. Four, I mean, the one and no contest with John Allen, but 5 of 6, you know, 5 of his last 7 fights have been a finish. So I actually kind of am almost betting on him to regress a little bit back towards the mean with somebody in Tafan Nchukwe, who has gone the distance in his last 2 fights.
Yeah, I really like that idea. I mean, I don't think it's going to be the dog play of the day, but
let's be honest. It Tafan Nchukwe could go out there and starch Mike Rodriguez in the first round, and honestly, Mike Rodriguez would probably be let go of the UFC after that. That'd be 3 finishes essentially in a row. I mean, if you count the Herman one, I guess they really won't.
Poor guy.
Yeah, maybe they keep him around. Maybe I'm being a little harsh, but listen, the UFC has been harsher before, so. You know, make no mistake, he probably needs a win.
I would agree with that.
That Danilo Marquez loss was horrible. I totally picked him in that fight, and he just gassed out and got choked out.
Yeah, so I would say, yeah, I think we gave it to you the best we could there. It's time to get on to the main card.
Let's do it, baby.
So to kick it off, we got Joaquin Buckley versus Antonio Hoyo, and this should be a striker's delight, realistically. I think, you know, Joaquin Buckley, someone that's going to come in, moving forward, looking to land big strikes early, close the distance. He bobs, weaves, does a lot of head movement, ducks. You know, he's going to be bringing it forward. And Ahoyo is one of those guys that actually fights really well off the back foot, moving backwards. He throws really good spinning kicks to the body. He does actually throw some nice straights also off his back foot, which when Deron Wynn wasn't busy sitting him down all fight on his ass with the double legs, he was actually landing some nice shit, and he won the first round pretty handily. But yeah, so I think in this fight, you know, Buckley does have a little bit of a wrestling background. Does he use it?
No, definitely not. And this is why I pull up his UFC stats. He literally has never used it.
Yeah, let's go. So 0.6 takedowns per 15 minutes at 16%.
So that's and I would never make a bet on something that you have never seen before. So I can only go based on what I've seen. And what I've seen is that Buckley will not be using his wrestling. So what I do know is that Ahoyo, for the first time in in a long since the Contender Series.
Yes.
So the first time pretty much ever in his UFC career, he's going to be fighting somebody that's not an elite wrestler. So if you could quickly go click on Deron Wins takedowns per 15.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Let me pull him up. Yeah. So here we go. This is how we do our research. So we go into Ahoyo, and then we go down. Here's his matchup against Wynn. You just want to see the matchup, or you want to see Deron Wynn's stats?
No. Click on Deron Wynn.
All right. So here we go. Deron Wynn.
Takedowns for 15. How many? It's a lot.
4.98.
Thank you. And at what percentage clip?
52, which is elite.
Which is elite. Thank you. And then go back and go to Andre Muniz.
Andre Muniz, he lands 3.12 at 40%, which is above average. Actually, great. It's great.
Yeah. Again. So, and both unanimous decision losses. So watch what you're going to hear this week. You're going to hear that Antonio Ahoyo has terrible cardio, that he's going to gas out, that you can't trust him. And maybe that's true. But when you're fighting elite wrestlers, anybody that does any sort of martial arts, which is not me, will tell you that wrestling cardio is different than striking cardio. It's just different. It's a different type of taxing, especially when you're fighting somebody so good that's going to make you work in every different position. Joaquin Buckley is not going to put that pressure on him. We also know that Antonio Ahoyo is like a brick shit house. Right? Like he's like almost just as jacked as Joaquin Buckley. They could have a bodybuilding contest before or after their fight. It doesn't really matter. So we go back to our question. Is Buckley priced fairly? Like, does he deserve a minus 200 tag?
No.
I don't know, right?
But he's coming off of a head kick knockout and he's a minus 200. And against anybody, the guy that's known for his kicks.
And for anybody that doesn't know, minus 200 is a 66.7% implied win probability. So to make money, he needs to win this fight 7 times out of 10.
And a striking matchup against a guy who's 5 inches taller, who's actually giving up 3 inches of reach, but that means that those kicks are going to be open all day long, right? And it's an open stance fight, so the liver is going to be open. Body kicks are open.
So for me, Joaquin Buckley is a total parlay buster. You cannot trust him, especially coming off that head kick knockout 8 months ago. One line I do see that's very interesting. I already think I like the over 1.5 at minus 125. Even if there is a finish, I don't think that it comes in that first 7 minutes. I think that they take a couple minutes to feel each other out. Again, I could totally be wrong.
Buckley's got a great chin.
Yeah, either one of them could absolutely flatline the other. They're both built like brick shit houses and will swing, but I think that they will both see and know that and are going to take some time. I like the over 1.5, and I just lean Ahoyo at the regrettably.
That's it. I'm hitting the button
because of the dog.
I'm hitting the button. Let's go. That's it. It's the dog of the day.
No, I don't know about that.
Well, he's my dog of the day.
He's your dog of the day?
Plus 170.
Oh, I think I have somebody else's dog of the day.
Ooh, man. So we get to hit the button twice.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I have two separate thoughts as dog of the day, maybe.
All right. Well, that's mine. So for all the reasons you laid out and...
Did I convince you into the dog of the
day? No. This was already... Yeah.
All right. You know what? So I feel like doing it. Cheers to you, dog of the day.
Hey, there he is.
Crack get that Miller. Bit. Got my
dog of the day.
UFC Fight Island koozie.
There we go. Look at him. Dog of the day. We got it. Anthony, if you're looking for my biggest underdog play, here you go. I think we did pretty well on that one. That's going to be a hell of a fight to kick off the main card, huh? So, yeah, I think that. You know, pretty solid. There we go. We kick off, you know, get our cool little banners going here. Now we move along to our next fight on the main card.
Move along.
We got Nate Maness versus Tony Gravely. This is going to be a grind.
This is going to be a great fight. Nate Maness is so freaking tough. And, like, I feel like that's one of those things that everybody says about fighters because, I mean, it's fair. You're all really tough. But, man, he's just gritty tough, like back alley, like just tough, man.
Triple C boys only give winners. Look at that. You see that? Look at that. Cash, cash, cash.
Love it.
You see the people are in here, man. We got to love the people.
We do love the fans. Thank you so much for tuning in, guys. For real. And gals. Anybody tuning in.
Yeah, we love all you guys. So make sure you hit that like. Make sure you subscribe. Make sure you're catching all our new videos.
Absolutely. Tony Gravely, as we were talking about stats, pull up them stats. Show the people how we do this.
Yeah. All right. So here we go. Let's take a look.
Tony Gravely specifically.
All right. So I'm going to kick our faces off of here for a second because I want to
kick our faces off.
Yeah. I want to get these people a little bit of a better look here.
Oh, my God.
So, yeah, look at this. All right. So now we got Tony Gravely versus Nate Maness. So first, we're going to take a look at the strikes landed per minute. Gravely, 4 per minute at a 54% rate. You look at Maness, he's landing just about half that at 2.4 at a 45% rate. And then you look at their strikes absorbed, and it's flip-flop. So, like, Maness is absorbing more than what Gravely's landing per 15, and Gravely's absorbing almost less than what Maness is landing himself. So their striking defense is actually the exact same. However, Gravely's landing 9% better.
Yeah,
who's going to win the stand-up?
Yeah, and you know, there's other factors that can go into that. So one of the things that's interesting is that they have a similar amount of fights, and I would also say have fought a relatively similar level of competition. But one of the things I do really want to point out is Tony Gravely's wrestling stats.
Yes. So next up, we move down to our grappling. We got Gravely 6.11 takedowns per 15 minutes at a 54% accuracy.
So that is, I mean, again, he's only fought Luke Sanders and Johnny Munoz Jr., but I mean, I'm sorry.
No.
I looked at that wrong. Jesus Christ. He's fought Verchak, DeFreitas, and Brett Johns. And actually Ray Rodriguez, which I'm not – they might be counting in there as the contender series. Sorry about that, everybody. So obviously he's fought those guys. So when you fought those guys, especially Brett Johns, who's a good grappler, he lost that fight. Those are that's elite level grappling, which is really thank you. That's what the screen I wanted to say. When you look at that, I mean, those are elite grappling numbers. And I think that's going to be a problem for Maness at the end of the day. Like, to the point that I feel like Gravely is like I don't want to say like lock of the night, but like, parlay piece of, I mean, that's who I would probably want to parlay to that -300. What does that build out to?
All right, so let's build a play together. So right now, I'm going to go ahead and be crazy and pull up a different banner here because we got a part of our play of the day.
Oh, shit. I love that.
Oh, shit.
He's surprising me with this right now.
Your boy is on the clock. Let's go.
He is ready.
All right, so here we go. I'm going to hop on DraftKings to put this together. You hop on FanDuel. This is how we do it. We find our value. So UFC, we hop in.
I actually have DraftKings up. DraftKings pulls it to a -104. A -300 with a -210 brings me to a -104, which is actually quite tasty. If I could get that plus money, I might just go berserker mode. I'm going to point bet if you want that.
What was that?
I'm going to check points bet if you want to check FanDuel.
All right, cool. Let's see.
I don't know what you were doing other than jacking it.
Well, I was pulling up DraftKings, then all of a sudden you were already on DraftKings. So.
Yeah, well.
All right, so let's see. This is how we shop for value here. So we got our
– got to have multiple outs. Any decent bookie will tell you that – not bookie. Any decent sports gambler will tell you that you should have multiple outs.
Yeah, so because it's -320 to go the distance on FanDuel, it ends up being -107. So
interesting. And PointsBet doesn't have the props up yet.
Yeah. So I don't know if I'm gonna play it. I don't know that I'm gonna play those two together, but Tony Gravely is gonna be the first part of my play of the day. And I know that there is a size discrepancy, but I just think the talent level and the experience level in the UFC, there's a big difference. And Gravely, although he does get reversed by highly experienced grapplers like Johns,
is not that guy. He's a striker.
Exactly. And the submissions he's got has been mostly after hurting people. The thing I worry about is Gravely leaving his neck in when he goes for a takedown. He has been submitted 5 times in his career, but I don't think Maness is going to be that guy.
Don't be that guy. You're not that guy. What's that? What's that video? You're not that guy.
Oh man. I actually don't even know.
Oh my God. No, I got to find that fucking video. I sound like an idiot.
All right. Well, anyways, so now we're going to move on to our next fight, which is actually the biggest spread as far as the betting line goes. We have Armand Sarukian -760 versus Christos Yagos +525.
This is crazy. And the line has gotten out of hand. I thought he was going to be, you know, a kind of a lock of the night type of thought earlier in the week, honestly, 2 weeks ago. And I looked at the line and he was like -500. I'm like, okay, well, that's ridiculous. And now he's -760, and that's still ridiculous. I think the most ridiculous thing, and we've seen this before with somebody like even somebody like Jack Shore last week or 2 weeks ago, is that these guys get so out of hand with how heavy of a favorite they are, and they're not even necessarily going to finish the fight majority of the time. Like, I don't think that Sarukian gets a finish, you know, 6 or 7 times out of 10 if this fight happens 10 times.
Right. So I mean,
that's the only angle I really see if you're trying to bet it. Otherwise, I don't really see any value.
Right. Well, I will say, as far as like from a finishing standpoint, I don't think Sarukian's a great finisher, but I also think Christos Yagos has a horrible gas tank. And I do think that this is going to be a heavy grappling matchup, as we saw Sarukian versus Frivola. Frivola, very well versed in scrambling and reversals and sweeps. So it turned into a little bit of a crazy matchup. I do think Yagos is that good of a wrestler. I just think that his gas tank is fucking terrible. And when you watch him fight Carlton Minus, and then in the third round, it gets so sketchy. And he could have gotten a finish at any other point if he was like really a good finisher, Christos Yagos. So I just don't think he's the guy to beat Sarukian. I'm not playing the money line, but what I am going to do.
I was just thinking about this. Don't say it. I'm going to say
greasy submission prop of the week.
Oh, that's different. Really?
At +420, chronic combat for Armand Sarukian.
Wow.
And then the other thought.
My thought is a little bit different.
What are you thinking?
All right. Well, you go first.
I was thinking Sarukian to win in round 3 +900. Oh,
you really think? All right, so that's really interesting thoughts.
And if you wanted to say like it'll, because like I think it would be interesting to put like a little bet on both.
I think Yagos survives. I do. Jakar Close doesn't finish anybody, but he didn't finish him. He survived. I mean, he beat Minus obviously, but you know, and he beat Hadzevic as well. The only person to finish him was Charles Oliveira and Josh Emmett on the regional scene and Gilbert Burns. Oh, no, not regional. That's actually just – wait, it was Josh Emmett on the regional scene, but then he had also lost to Gilbert Burns in the UFC in 2014. So I guess that was his first stint. I guess he's now in his second stint in the UFC, which is actually an interesting stat. Oh, I did know that. Of course I knew that. Anyway – only elite people have finished him, obviously. I'm not sure. And Armin honestly might be that guy. Armin could be. So I like your thoughts. One thing I just thought that was interesting. I may like your plays better, honestly. One thing I thought that was interesting was the fight to be won by unanimous decision, which is a DraftKings prop, +120. And Sarukian to win by unanimous decision, which is +130. But at +120, you know, I think that if Sarukian wins, which is he's going to, I think it's very possible he just wins all 3 rounds dominantly.
That totally makes sense. I'm not looking to place a huge bet on this fight because it seems like the line has really played out to where the, you know, how it's going to happen. So next up, it sounds like it's time to get to our, not quite our co-main event, but this is a featured fight on the main card. And oh God, like really? Ariane Lipsky versus Mandy Bohm? Like, really? This is the one that we're putting like on the third to last fight of the night? Really?
You know why? And there's a reason why. And it's part of why I think it might be my dog of the day type of play.
Ooh, okay. All right, talk to me.
So my thought on this fight is that this fight is not going the distance.
Ooh.
So Ariana Lipsky has finished three of her last four fights, or the fights have ended by finish, I should say. She's lost her last two by ground and pound finish to Shevchenko and Montana De La Rosa, who are not necessarily known as finishers. She beat Luana Carolina by knee bar. And whatever little bit I've seen of this Mandy Bohm chick, she's like hell on wheels. She seems like a crisp striker. She's going to come forward. She seems like she's ready for the show, man. I mean, I'm going to see how she looks at weigh-in stuff.
Dog of the day.
She's fought at Bellator. She's beat Jade Mason Wong and TKO. So those are two decent promotions, which she had a finish. She's actually finished two of her last three fights. So I do think that this fight gets finished at some point. They're on the main card. You know what I mean? So
wow. So I find that super interesting because, you know, when I was watching some of the highlights and going through the tape for this fight, there's something I noticed about Bohm that, like, I really didn't like. Her chin is all the way up. Her hands are all the way down. And, like, she really doesn't look, like, coordinated in her striking. Like, it really just looks like she's, like, she doesn't look comfortable to me. She does is she just absolutely overwhelms her opponents with brute strength and physicality. And if it ends up in the clinch, taken down on the mat, and she gets that ground and pound going, like, it gets dangerous. Now, her size is something that she's been able to use against other opponents, but it looks like she's the same height as Lipsky, but holds a 3-inch reach advantage. So they're not showing that on UFC stats. I pulled that off of Tapology, so who knows how true that is. I want to see them face off. But yeah, I think Lipsky, she's got some crisp striking, and Bohm, she's got some really good takedowns and ground and pounds. So wow, a dog of the day inside the distance plus 150.
Yeah, and again, and I even think Bohm is an interesting stab as the dog as well. Because I don't I don't know. Can Lipsky, again, pull off the quick sub? Maybe, yeah. But, like, what else is her path to victory? She's gonna win a decision like she did against Isabella De Paula? Like, I don't
know. And, God, I mean, the fact that she went to decision in that fight when she starts with an early knockdown and then can't finish it against the Padua, and then she gets reversed, and, like, it's just not impressive. I don't get this love for Lipsky this week. I really think, if anything, it's dogger pass.
That's what I'm saying. And again, it's not even love. The girl is even money with somebody making their debut. This is her, what is this, her sixth UFC fight? One, two, three. But this is her seventh UFC fight, and she's even money. She's 2-4 in the UFC.
Wow. Yeah, I agree. I mean, let's, shall we move on to our co-main event here?
Yeah, both of those thoughts are my dog of the night thoughts, man. Oh, we have lost TB Scouting MMA in the chat because his internet is terrible. Oh, he's back.
No, I actually hit the back button on my browser. I'm the idiot.
I was going to introduce you to Terrence, who was trying to gnaw on things.
Well, hey, he's hanging out. That's good. All right.
Terrence
well,
is in the chat. We appreciate that.
Look at that. We're back. I thought that it was going to be a huge crisis, but we made it. We did it.
Thank you for coming back.
Yeah. So, all right. So, co-main event, huh?
Co-main event, man. We're here.
We're rolling along. So,
oh, look, and Phil's here. Hello, Philip.
Hey,
Philip. Oh, you only saw his ears.
Yeah, maybe you guys will meet Bogey one day, my doggy. But anywho, we got Iwan Kutelaba versus Devin Clark.
I doubt your dog will be walking across your laptop, though.
No, highly doubtful. I keep that dude locked out of the room.
Cheers, by the way. Cheers to the co-main event.
Hey, cheers. We made it, right?
Miller time. So shout out Miller Lite if you want to sponsor us at any point in time.
I got some fresh agua here. Yeah, anybody, right?
Poland Spring Aquafina.
Yeah. So, man, this fight's going to be a fucking shit show in round one. This is going to be fucking wild. Let's put it this way. Devin Clark got out-wrestled by Anthony Smith and ends up getting submitted. I mean, Iwan Kutelaba is an elite wrestler. I'm slacking here. Let's get you people the stats for this fight. Please, because, I mean, we've been talking about high-level grappling, and here we are again. I think we found ourselves there. I'll skip over the striking stats this time. Iwan Kutelaba, 3.69 takedowns per 15.
At least at the moment.
57% accuracy. and he has a 78% takedown defense. So Devin Clark with his 36% accuracy and 2.7 takedowns per 15, I mean, they essentially, it looks like they go for the same rate of takedowns, but Kutelab is so much more effective in his overall grappling. He's also the southpaw. He lands at a much lower percentage, but because of his output and his ground and pound, he does land 5 strikes per minute. So Kutelaba, he's going to come out like a bat out of hell in round one. And I just can't see a way that Devin Clark survives the storm. And if he does, are we looking at a 10-8 and another potential draw if Kutelaba gasses out? But I don't know if Clark survives, man.
I know one thing is for sure, that Devin Clark's threshold for punishment is not going to be as high as Justin Jacoby's. That we've seen. Like, we've seen that. Justin Jacoby's much bigger. He's a much better striker than Devin Clark. There was real threat there. And we've also seen Justin Jacoby come out very recently and put away Darren the Dentist Stewart and kick him out of the UFC. So he is brutal. And I actually think Justin Jacoby is, like, probably – I mean, like, I don't want to be rude to Devin Clark, but – I mean, Devin Clark might be a step down from Dustin Jacoby. Like, I'm not really sure.
Oh, I feel that, yeah.
You know, I'm not really sure. Like, Justin Jacoby has really proven something. And I'm also going to be honest, that second round of the Dustin Jacoby-Ion Kutelaba fight, that could have went either way.
I'm pulling it up right now, actually. I wanted to talk
really
about that.
It was really close, man. It was close.
So, here's what happens. Is Kutelaba Kutelaba only lands 19 strikes. The Jacoby's 40, though.
That is it. All right. Yeah, you're right.
But it's the third round, because Kutelaba lands 26 and Jacoby lands 33. But Jacoby gets a takedown and a minute of control. That's the problem. So Jacoby lands the takedown and the optics are that Kutelaba is completely gassed. So at that point, you know, Jacoby's one of three on takedowns in the third round and the tide has completely changed. So I get it. I get it. But Kutelaba made it the distance, though. It's not like he just got finished.
Well, so that's what I'm saying. So maybe that was my thought. And maybe I'm crazy, but I wanted to maybe fade the narrative here. You know how I love them plus money plays. I was hoping that maybe Devin Clark survives and I can again avoid having to pick a side and I can play the fight going the distance at plus 150.
All right, well, you're going to call me crazy because I hope Anthony, that was asking for the big plays, is sticking around, because you take Tony Gravely, you take Ion Kutelaba, and you got my play of the day.
Wow.
I'm serious. It's just, I really think Kutelaba's on a whole other level. I think he's going to come out here, something to prove. He really, really looks locked in. And, you know, like you said, it's a drop off in competition. It's been
2 years nearly to the day. It'll be 2 years or minus 10 days or whatever from his last finish, which was that brutal finish of Khalil Roundtree. He had to fight Magomed Ankalaev twice, which was so unfortunate. Like, that happens. And he went in fearless like a warrior. And then Dustin Jacoby, man, that tough fight. So I get it. This is the rebound spot of all rebound spots for Ion. Because if he goes out there, hasn't learned, gasses in the first round, gets sat on for, you know, 9 minutes in the next two rounds, I mean, that's just, you have
write
to
write it off. Yeah.
You have to learn. So,
plus 149. We got a parlay. Kutelaba and Gravely, plus 149. Play of the day.
Wow.
Lock it in, people.
I think I like that too. I'm probably going to tail you on that. And I might even throw a little sprinkle on my thought of going the distance, because even if you like Kutelaba to win by decision, that's plus 600. That's greasy.
Okay. All right. And you know what, people, I might have another good play for you on this final fight, on this main event.
This main event is really kind of crazy, because listen, I love Anthony Lionheart Smith. I feel like everybody does. He's a fan favorite. I always respect him. I love what he's done for, you know, the sport. I love his broadcasting too. But like, this is, you can't get finished by Ryan Spann here, right?
No, I mean, come on, man.
Like, the good news
is I watched every fight of Ryan Spann's in the UFC, and I watched Anthony Smith's every single fight since he moved up to light heavyweight. And the difference in fight IQ, the difference in overall approach,
yeah,
the difference in overall grappling technique, okay, and ability, jiu-jitsu, and to stay calm,
striking.
Just Anthony Smith should run the fuck away with this fight. And the reason that Ryan Spann is getting so much shine is that he knocked out Misha Cirkunov.
Yikes.
I mean, we're talking about the guy that had Johnny Walker on skates. And then he keeps shooting for the fucking takedown as he's getting hammer elbowed, hammer fist to the fuck. And then all of a sudden he's just fucking out. Asleep. It's like, dude, did you not watch Juan Adams versus Greg Hardy? What are you doing, bro? Like, oh, you can't, God, when you're in a big weight class with those guys with the huge wingspans that could really wing those hammer fists, like you can't stay in those.
But dude, bad single leg positions. He was fucking him up on the feet.
Yes, he had him on skates, dude. And then why are you shooting for a takedown?
Yeah, pull away. Because he's tired. No fight. No. Really scary. This is his first 5-round main event. You worry about his gas tank. Anthony Smith is going to, I think, approach this fight a little differently than Glover Teixeira fight in the fact that he knows that he has 5 rounds to put this guy away. And my bet on this fight has to be Anthony Smith by in the distance, because 25 yes. minutes is so long.
Plus
it's
100, so long. Right?
It's so long. Maybe we can find it a little different. Maybe can we find it a little higher?
So DraftKings is plus 100. Anthony Smith inside the distance. I mean, that's honestly probably another. So let's see. We got Randy DeGregorio in the chat. So talking about that play I had, full hammer on that plus 149 or just a little something. I'm going full hammer, my dog. We're going full hammer on the parlay of Gravely and Kutelaba. So, you know, follow at your own risk. Obviously, you know, anything can happen in a fight. But here we are on the main event right now, and it sounds like we got a consensus play. Anthony Smith inside the distance. Let's try to find our best bet here. If we do a double chance on FanDuel, it's plus 110. No, it's plus 110.
Plus 110, and then double chance on DraftKings is plus on. Oh, you had that already. Plus 100.
Yeah,
no,
come
doesn't
on.
Have the props up yet.
Oh, boo.
Who's right?
So plus 110 on FanDuel, Anthony Smith by knockout or submission. He sounded a little like 5 rounds. Ryan Spann was completely fucking gassed in the third round against fucking.
Bro, I mean, okay, but look at this.
Against. Yeah.
What are you even saying right now?
Well, I was saying that Ryan Spann was completely gassed in the third round when he won against Sam Alvey, and he won a split decision because of how bad he looked in the third round.
Right. And Sam Alvey has looked terrible.
Like Sam Alvey, you think Anthony Smith isn't going to finish him by the fourth or fifth round? Get the fuck out of here.
No, and that's what's crazy, because you look at the over total rounds. I was thinking about this in the shower like last week. And if I was like, okay, if I'm the Vegas, what am I setting the under over at? Because it's 5 rounds. I thought it would be 3.5. And it's 2.5. Over 2.5 is plus 105. And I don't even trust it. I don't like that. I don't like that dog cheese. I might I might lean with Vegas. It really might go under. So I don't necessarily have a lean that way, but I do. I do think that Anthony Smith within 5 rounds gets it done here and is, you know, starts clawing his way back up.
God damn it, that's it. It's another play of the day. I'm dropping hammer on this. I'm dropping a fucking hammer on this.
Wow.
Yeah.
A hammer.
Yes.
You feel good about Anthony.
Yes.
You got to feel good about Anthony.
You know the last time you know the last time I felt good about Anthony Smith? Devin Clark.
You're right.
I dropped a hammer on him by finish.
I didn't feel as good yet.
And boom, first round.
I stayed away. And because the problem
this is such a similar feel.
It is, because the problem with me is I love Anthony Smith so much, and that I always feel that sometimes like he doesn't show up to the best of his ability. And you know, I worry about that. But this is very
he seems motivated. He is not happy with Ryan Spann. No, I'm serious. He saw like what he was saying in the lead up. He's like, oh, you're locked in the cage with me, or blah blah blah. Like, he was not happy about that. In an interview, he was talking about, like, he's got a little chip on his shoulder. I don't think he's overlooking Ryan Spann.
I do. I agree. I think I'm gonna go full degen play on this one with you.
Bang. We hit it. Let's go. Play. Hold on. Wait a second. Hold on. I got a new idea here. We're gonna hop on another one here.
So it's a 4 p.m. 4 p.m. Eastern time start, right? Or is that
the no way. Are you kidding me? That's terrible news. Yeah, it's a 7 o'clock main card. Full degen play. So yeah, there you go. Anthony, if you were looking for your big plays, we got our full degen play. Anthony Smith inside the distance.
That's a good
Anthony
spot.
On Anthony. And also, if you like Tony Gravely, isn't that another Anthony?
Is his full name Anthony?
I don't know. Gravel? That's a good question.
I think his name just might be Tony.
It might be.
Don't assume but him.
I don't want to assume. That's right. Asses. I do like asses. So.
Like Emily Whitmire and Hannah Goldie. I can't wait for that one. That's
yeah, I'm sure. So anyways, guys, thank you for making it this far. I hope you enjoyed the live format. I mean, I'm so glad we had a bunch of comments in here, getting the people all riled up. You can see our plays as they go. And this thing's going to be live on YouTube right away. We'll get it up on all the podcast channels ASAP. But yeah, I think now that we got something more to offer on you know, just this overall experience, like yeah, I think you guys might want to be checking us out on YouTube going forward.
Yeah, listen, please, thank you so much for listening. Please like this video right now. It only takes a second. Please like the video. Subscribe to our YouTube channel so you get our videos right away. Send them to your friends so we can get our views up. Follow us at Chronic Combat Conversations on Instagram and at Chronic Combat on Twitter. You can follow my awesome co-host at TB Scouting MMA on Twitter, Instagram, and Verdict and Tapology, and you can find me at Guru Scouting MMA on the same places as well. Give us 5-star ratings, like I said, share them to your friends. You can find us on Spotify, Google Podcasts, and Apple Podcasts. We will see you next week for an incredible UFC 266 Alexander Volkanovski, the featherweight champ, taking on Brian T. City Ortega. I could not be more excited for this fight. You also got Valentina Shevchenko defending her flyweight title versus Lauren Lucky Murphy, and the welterweight rematch for 16 years ago, Nick Diaz, the return 6 years in the making, versus Robbie Lawler. A fight that, I really could not get more excited for. So, but we got 15 fights till then. So thanks for tuning in, everybody.